Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Welcome back to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast. I'm Jessica Trotter, and I'm joined by Cheryl Lindemann and Mari Garza, and we're your primary selection team here at Cattle. Hey, everybody.
Hello. Good
morning. So, last few weeks, months, maybe all of 2020, have been fascinating. How is it going? How are you doing? What are you doing to get through this?
Wow.
Yes, okay. I'm doing a lot of that too.
Yeah. I know that I lately have just, I've been really trying to lean into picture books to help me like think about new things. I like a lot of books that feature the stars and, you know, the Northern Lights, things like that. And I'm really looking for themes of family, especially because at least for me, I'm really not able to be with, you know, my immediate family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking for just new ways to, you know, new things to look for, grateful things to just sort of meditate on and think about, looking for just ways to notice God in the everyday and, you know, keep on keeping on, I guess. That's what I'll say.
How about you, Cheryl?
Yeah, I've been like sort of, you know, obviously with my husband and my daughter for about, 9 months now, pretty much you know, all the time, and yep, with my daughter home with school and all the challenges that is, but really trying to think about the sort of the beauty in that, you know, being all together and not having all in some ways the pace that we had before. So there's that flip side of it. And I have those moments of true appreciation where I know I'll look back on this time and say, wow, we got to spend so much time together in this unique way. And, you know, walks, really enjoying those walks together. We've really enjoyed, you know, horses, which to me, I'm entering my fourth decade with horses, and I just really enjoying in this much deeper level what that means to me to be with them. I lost a horse this year, and that really refocused that for me. You know, tea, nature, books. So those things, trying to sort of create a story through this that it's positive,
right,
despite everything, you know. Not blind positivity, but just sort of a thread of something to carry through it. How about you, Jessica?
Yeah, it's sort of, there is something to that. It's sort of finding my center in all of it, mm-hmm, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes that's, you know, it is the walks, it's nature. I don't take enough time for that necessarily. And things like I have found kind of all the way through, physical things have been good for me. I've taken, you know, the era of Zoom, I've been able to take dance classes from people all over the country.
Wow.
So cool.
Or, you know, yoga from Just Be in Lansing.
Yeah.
And it really has been sort of trying to quiet my own mind in all of this. Mm-hmm. I can't fix everything else, but I can adjust how I react to it.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of been my outlet, because I'm still struggling with reading too. I'm doing much more of it, but it's still more of a struggle than it ever has been for me.
Yeah.
So it's been interesting. It is. If I could step back and not necessarily be absolutely part of it, it would be much more interesting. it's all of these things have brought out the best of a lot of people, and some things I didn't want to see. But it's been a trip all around.
Definitely.
A trip that's will continue.
We're still there. I guess so. We went a bit circles on topics for this month, and there's some underlying themes throughout, but I think maybe in our discussion of our books that we had the real underlying thread to them is that they're all really unique within their lane or creating their own lane or We have some interesting titles for you today, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, excited about them.
Yeah. So, Maddie, do you want to start off this time?
Sure. I want to congratulate Case and Alexander for King and the Dragonflies.
It's calendar.
Winner of the National Book Award for Young People's Literature. Mm-hmm. What an amazing book. I love this story. It was just written so well. It's about a boy who is growing up in Louisiana. I was trying to go through it again, and I couldn't quite remember what the time frame was, but you just can picture the heat, the humidity, I guess.
Sure. Yep.
He is living, it's a small town, and he's dealing with a lot of, you know, issues of identity, but also racism, grief. There's he's lost a brother. He's, you know, having difficulty communicating with his parents. And I don't know how to put the, I mean, in some ways, kind of dramatic language that was in the book. Mm-hmm. He's really kind of challenging inwardly, not necessarily outwardly, but just talking quite a bit about, you know, why is it that everything doesn't seem fair? This is from the book on page 54. It isn't fair that it seems like some people just get to go through life without having a single worry or drop of sadness. Mm. But it seems like all the tragedy in the world likes to follow me. And you read that on the surface, and it does sound kind of dramatic for a little middle schooler, but there's just so much in the story that, you know, is causing him to wonder whether his father is going to keep loving him if he knows about, you know, the identity issues that he's thinking through and trying to decide upon. He has a friend. I don't know. I'm struggling here to really convey how much it just really meant to me personally to read about a child who's, you know, on a trip to figure out who he is and to accept himself for who he is, as well as, you know, making friends and exploring and learning how to accept others as well. So congratulations to Case and Calendar.
That was a really neat thing to hear for all the people who were announced for the National Book Award. One thing, when I knew you were doing this, one book that came to mind that I haven't talked about that I read a little earlier this year, part of me wants to say it's just a novella, but so many novellas I'm coming across right now pack so much in.
Yeah.
And this the book I wanted to talk about is called The Four Profound Weaves by R.B. Lemberg. They are, I say up and coming, they've been in the business for a very long time, but they're finally really getting recognized for their writing. This particular novella is part of their Birdverse series. It's fantasy, and it's sort of in the epic fantasy kind of category. But it's this beautifully developed, unique but familiar world. It's the backdrop for this. It's a bit of a fantasy quest, but it allows for that the two main characters are both people at different points in their life trying to figure out their own identity and making it make sense to themselves. Both of them have transitioned in gender. And both are in different points in that understanding of what that means to their identity now. And this is just a really thoughtful, nuanced exploration of gender and sexuality and a sense of self, but it's all just packed into this, along with a magical quest, all packed into this tiny little novella. And it was so beautifully written. And I just can't wait to further explore their world that they've developed, because it's a really neat world all by itself.
Okay.
And this is The Four Profound Weaves by R.B. Lemberg. Cheryl, you had one of our, yeah. one of the themes that we started with.
Yeah, we started with talking about possibilities of talking about some Native American Heritage Month titles, as it is November. Mm-hmm. And this is a book that I'd like to talk about first. I have two. But the first one, I was so excited about when I heard about it, because it's going back to our thread or our theme in this conversation. It's truly unique and has never been done before. The title is When the Light of the World Was Subdued, Our Songs Came Through, a Norton Anthology of Native Nations Poetry, edited by Jor Harjo, Leanne Howe, Jennifer Elise Forster, and some other contributing editors. And this is, like I said, the first Norton Anthology of Native Nations Poetry. And there have been some excellent compilations, and this book actually gives credit in the introduction by Jor Harjo to a lot of the excellent compilations that have come out in the in years previous. But this one is truly unique in its scope and comprehensiveness. It features 161 poets, starting in 1678 with a poet named Eleazar. Wow. It was a first recorded Native poem written by a Native person who's a senior at Harvard College. That poem is the first one. And then the poems go all the way through to the present. There are more than 90 nations represented in it. And the arrangement of the book is really excellent. It's arranged first regionally by the regional, you know, parts of the United States. It only includes the United States in this compilation. But then in each section, it's arranged chronologically. So it starts with the oldest poem that they included in the collection. And because it's a Norton anthology, there's so much, you know, each poem has an excellent bio of the poet that begins the section. And this is one of those books where the foreword is beautiful. It's by Jor Harjo. The afterword is really wonderful. There are the notes at the end. And it's just such a great springboard for diving into some of these collections. And it pulls so much out that hasn't been seen before. So we talked a little bit about this, talking about gift books. We've done that in the past. But this is one that I really recommend as a gift. It's beautiful. It's important. It's thick. It's something you can dip in and out of, which I think in these times is nice to have something that, you know, doesn't, maybe you can only handle a poem. But already I've enjoyed so many poets I'd never heard of before. So yeah, really, really special book.
This is obviously a group effort, but it's worth noting Joy Harjo's just been re-upped for her third term hasn't she?
As our poet laureate. Yeah. Yep. So it's a really beautiful book. And then my next title, let's go over to Madi first, and then Jessica and I are going to talk about one together. Madi, what did you have? You had a title for Native American Heritage Month.
I had a couple books. One of them is Apple Skin to the Core. This is by Eric Gansworth. And this is a memoir, also long listed for the National Book Award for Young People's Literature. And it's a memoir of his history with seeing Native friends, family, how they, you know, his grandparents, how they have been time and time again tried to be erased. He talks quite a bit about his grandparents being sent off to boarding schools. And it's kind of written a little bit in a novel in verse, although it's a memoir. And there are photographs throughout the book
that
I really enjoyed seeing of his family members. So he kind of, you know, he's got these numbers throughout the book, but they're just like little snippets of pieces of history in his family. And I almost feel like I'm getting one of the stories confused with the next book I'm going to talk about, but I really liked it because I don't read a whole lot of memoirs about Native persons. And I just really enjoyed reading his perspective on especially how in the past the American government, others in the States would try to send off Native children to boarding schools to maybe put them through what they think would be a better experience for them, when sometimes they prefer to be at home. They, in some cases, find it a gift if they get to be sent home because they were sick or something, because they know that they get to keep their stories and keep passing them on, which is so important to the culture that Eric Gansworth is writing about. So, yeah, that was really fun. I really enjoyed reading. And then the other one, which actually I'd been waiting for a long time, and it showed up in my my Libby app, Rural Voices, 15 Authors Challenge Assumptions About Small Town America. And it was edited by Nora Shalloway Carpenter. And it's actually a collection of 15 different stories. And there is at least one Native story in there. It was by Joseph Bruschak. And that one, I didn't know very much about him as a writer.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of him giving his, like, a very mini biography in his short story. I really enjoyed hearing about
it. I'm curious about that.
Yeah.
I like his writing. I've read.
And one of his grandfathers was an Abenaki Native, and he went through his life kind of hiding who he was, because again, and during the time period that I'm guessing that he grew up in, his grandfather would have been in the 1920s or so, and it was just so looked down upon to be Native. And this, he grew up in the I think it was the Adirondack Mountains area in New York, Vermont area. But one of the stories that stood out to me for sure was that one. And then the other one, I mean, I'm just going to mention briefly by Tirza Price. It's a Michigan story, growing up on a farm. And it's, I've always been interested, since the days, Cheryl, when I was working at Mason, I don't consider Mason like super rural, but it was definitely, it's definitely a community that's different from what I grew up with. I grew up in the city, and I really enjoy learning about the communities in Ingham County that may be considered rural or have just kind of a little bit of a different vibe than, you know, what I'm used to from city living. So, I think you would like it, Cheryl.
Yeah, I've been waiting to read that one too. So add it to the giant TBR.
Seriously.
Baskets. The overflowing baskets, literally. I can see them from my desk. Well, that kind of segues nicely, I think, into the book Jessica and I are going to talk about. A lot of the same themes and the rural piece of it too. The book is The Mason House, a Memoir by T. Marie Bertineau. And it's just interesting that Jessica and I, we talked about it, and then Jessica, you got it on Edelweiss, right?
Yep.
And ARC, and then I bought it right when it was releasing. And so I think you read it maybe a couple weeks before me or something like that. But I saw this book, the independent bookstores often will show some top books. It was a Michigan bookstore. I think it was Snowbound Books. Marquette had showed something about it. What is that? A really cool, compelling cover, right? And I looked into it and I just could not believe the subject matter. Because I have a personal connection to the area. And again, going back to our thread of this discussion, there are so few books, memoirs written from this area. And this is the, Upper Michigan, the good old UP, but it's the part of Upper Michigan that there's a lot of history. Some people may know about that, but people don't maybe know as much about it. It's the Keweenaw Peninsula, or as my family called it, the Copper Country. And as my family calls it, up home. That is literally what my parents call it. We always called it up home, even when we lived in the west side of the state. It's up home. So this is a memoir set, Therese Marie Bertineau, writing about growing up there, leaving there, coming back to there. And what really is amazing to me about this book, with my growing up going there for Christmases and summers and for all different occasions, is she captured it so perfectly. It brought me back there. I don't get to go there very often. And there, most of my, extended family, we have a few members up there, but most of them have passed away. And it sort of feels almost haunted for me up there, because I can remember so much, but those people are gone. And I cannot believe how much she captured that area. But that's just scratching the surface mm-hmm. of it. Jessica, what were your thoughts when you read this?
The interesting thing for me is that I really wanted to hear, we talked about this, I wanted to hear what you thought of it, because I don't have the connection to the area. And uh-huh. I got all that feeling from the book. It's a really moving story. She touches on those themes of, one side of her family is the group of people that would have been sent away to schools. The other side of her family are the people that were working in the mining companies, or at least descended from the people working in the mining companies. Mm-hmm. My closest, most recent experience with this would have been something like The Women of Copper Country. By Mary Doria Russell. It was just, and there's always an appeal to me of family stories mm-hmm. and trying to kind of figure out what shaped your family. Because that's one of the themes here is thinking about the hardships that both sides, whether it's the Cornish family or the Indigenous family, the hardships that shaped both sets of stories and affected the family down to her, down to this current generation.
Yeah, absolutely. T. Marie Bertineau is a member of the Keweenaw Indian community up in Launce up there, which is very close to Mason, where she grew up, just south of there. And since the writing of this book, she's actually moved back up there again. She really couldn't mm-hmm. stay away. So, what you see in this story, I don't really want to give too much of it away, but it's a family story. It's a story about the power of place, also about the power of what does it mean? What is a home? And literally, there's the Mason house as a home, but then her grandmother as being sort of a home for her in the world, that safe person, that safe place. And then the pull of that area of the UP as being home. And she leaves it and she comes back and she leaves it and she comes back for very, for reasons, her family, she doesn't have much control over it. She's younger. And then really that pull of home about the Anishinaabe Ojibwe heritage and coming back and reclaiming that through joining that community, through powwows, through coming back to that heritage that she, sort of like Madi mentioned in one of the other, the books previous, it wasn't as much a part of her upbringing as she wanted it to be. She didn't get all those stories before her grandparents passed on. And there were many reasons why that was. And so that connecting with that, that part of her was healing for her whole family. So I don't want to give up too much away, because I think it's just an incredible book if you, mm-hmm. But I think that's, highly recommend it. And again, a great book as a gift this year. And very universal theme with that special person or that safe person in people's lives. And that power of a grandparent.
Very much.
Right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's set in the UP and there's that magical piece of it. But really it's so many people who, we all have that story of that person or people who are those mm-hmm. touchstones for us, right?
Mm-hmm. That may be a reasonable segue for me to go into, kind of change gears a little bit. I have one of the books that I wanted to talk about was a total surprise to me. And that is I Have Something to Tell You by Chasten Buttigieg.
Oh, yeah.
And if you are not familiar, that is Pete Buttigieg's husband now. Without getting into the politics of it, I didn't know what to expect going into it, but it is, he is from Traverse City area. And the appeal of a Michigan family story got the better of me, and I really wanted to kind of see what was going on. And the interest, what made me kind of think of it coming out of the Mason house and that comment about a grandparent, that touchstone person is, that's actually where the title, I think, comes from.
Really?
It's sort of from his conversation with his grandmother when he finally came out to his grandmother. Now, this is a memoir. It is really about growing up in Northern Michigan, getting through college, figuring out what he wanted to do with his life. It's not about politics as it is now or his life with Pete. That's very little of the book. Mm-hmm. It's really more what I found that was really interesting and moving for me is that it's really raw and honest about growing up in a conservative area and feeling that that's the way you're supposed to be, but then realizing, you know, you don't fit everybody's view of what's, you know, a good conservative boy should be. So, I mean, he is gay, you know, he realizes he's gay. He doesn't think of that as anything good because that's the way he was brought up. But it also, it goes way beyond, you know, LGBTQ issues. He's a first generation college student. He didn't know what that meant. He didn't understand the issues of student loans. He didn't have a good foundation to figure out, you know, he lives in that kind of bubble that many people do, in that everybody tells you to go to school, getting to school will help everything, but then you come out of this with all this debt. Mm-hmm. And as you're trying to pay that down, trying to find a job, you have one medical issue and you're sunk.
Yeah.
And it's that sort of the lack of support and education that we give people is really, I mean, it's sinking a generation before mm-hmm. we ever get started. Yeah. And it was just, he's, it's fun. It's funny and chatty. But he talks about some really heavy topics. And I think it's just one of those, again, I really wasn't sure what to expect, but it's one of the few books that I think is really hitting kind of all this point, these points of the sense where it gets political is that all of these things are decisions that are made so far out of Traverse City, but they have, you know, allowing more, predatory lending in you know, education or those that it's a whole lot of conversations that are have well away from Traverse City, Michigan, or Lansing, Michigan, even for some cases, that affect sort of almost every facet of his life now. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's just sort of, it was a really interesting book that I wanted to kind of bring to people's attention. There is a buzz. There's a good reason for the buzz on this book. And it is a very Michigan, you know, up Northern Michigan, but a very, you know, a very Michigan story. And there's one other one that I want to bring up too, just to make sure it gets in, and it is totally different. This is more along the weird ones that I tend to bring. There is a new, and it actually hit the library reads list for November. And it's called Before the Coffee Gets Cold. And it's actually an international bestseller debut that is just hitting the United States.
Yeah.
It's by Tashikuza Kawaguchi. And it is set in Japan, in a small little hole in the wall, off a back alley cafe. There's this legendary cafe, and in it they say that you can travel through time briefly, or you can be back to maybe talk to somebody, maybe do something, maybe just see someone, but you have to come back before the coffee gets cold.
Wow.
And it's essentially, I think, four linked stories. It's about community. It's about connection. It's sort of that, where would you go? What would you do? It's you can't go far because you're pretty much, you know, you're limited to what, you know, the coffee. So it's not like you can really even leave the cafe. So right. You almost want to say, okay, I need to talk to this person who was in the cafe on this date. It's a very strange, interesting, or, you know, maybe across the street, maybe you can get that far. But it's just a really interesting meditation on family, made family, chosen family, the notion, you know, the notion of missed connections or those choices you make, how might it have gone? It's just a really, it's a slow going story. So if you're looking for action, this ain't it. This is more of a meditation. This is not long. It's a slightly long novella, I would say. It's not, I don't feel like it's a really good full size book. But it made you think. Yeah. So I just want to throw that out there as one.
So I think you said that there were like four stories in there. Would you say you could just read like one of them, or?
I think you'd want, I mean, I would start at the beginning and go through.
Okay.
Because it is a group of characters that are,
I see.
Kind of their stories come together more as it goes on. Mm-hmm. But it's an interesting premise, and there's more details about how you can go back in time. And it's a little more daunting than people think when they walk in. But it's a neat story, a neat set of stories.
That's really fun considering how much, you know, power coffee does really have in our lives. And here, literally and figuratively, coffee's sort of in control of the situation to some degree.
Yep.
Which is how I feel some days. So.
Yes. And actually, if you get into the stories, it even goes a little farther than that with the coffee. So yes, actually.
So funny.
Yeah.
Wow. That's cool.
So what have you got, Cheryl?
I actually have one more here that is, again, very unique, but very timely. This is a parenting book and unique in its approach. The title is When the World Feels Like a Scary Place, Essential Conversations for Anxious Parents and Worried Kids by Abigail Gewertz, PhD. And this book, I love the approach because it has a lot of conversations. So if people don't like that kind of approach, like talking points, but like sample conversations, I personally really like those because you read them and of course, and you go, yeah, no one really talks like that, but it does. It helps. Next time, these have really helped me. The next time I do go have a conversation, I really do try to remember the way it was said or the feeling of the conversation. Of sort of the heat level of the conversation, if that makes sense, especially if it's a parenting thing and it's challenging, to sort of bring that down, slow it down, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. She starts this book out sort of talking about September 11th, 2001, and her son was 7 at the time, and they had, as a family, worked really hard to keep him from seeing the images of the towers falling. And she was one of the people who was consulted at that time about how to approach this with children, and was consulted by the media and that sort of thing. So she'd worked really hard in her own home to protect her child. Well, he ended up seeing the image at a friend's house and came home, and she was sort of horrified. She said, oh my gosh, okay, I'm gonna have this conversation with him. And he said, well, you know, they were jumping out the window. And he said, I would jump out the window too. And he said, everybody would have jumped out the window. And she said, why? And he said, well, duh, because of the trampolines. Oh. So in his mind, he thought that the children were jumping down and that the fire department had trampolines down there. And what she said was, this is the way that his mind at 7 processed this and made it something he could live with, right? Mm-hmm. And she said that the rest of the book, and that's where she starts, is such a great introduction to me. She said, we're not there lying to our kids. That's not what it is. But we're helping them make their own trampolines for whatever the topic is so that they can process and get through it.
Right.
I was like, wow, what a eureka moment, right? Because so this gets into, you know, even things like politics, civility, things that our kids are thinking about. I know in my own home, my daughter's asking about this. Conversations about the divided society, perils of technology, violence, big emotions. There is a little piece on COVID. This book was published before we knew that COVID was so airborne. So it's a little bit more about sanitation, about the angle. But I recommend this book to all parents, even if you just dip in and out of it, just to get some suggestions about, she really works on how to calm yourself, how to calm yourself before you approach these conversations with your teen.
Yeah.
And we can always use practice in that because things just get so heated. Mm-hmm. I really like this a lot. I mean, I this is so helpful for me already. I'm getting so many questions at bedtime right now. And so this hit it right on the head, especially about civility and division. Even though I don't show my daughter the news, she hears things, you know,
she
can sense the tension and trying to figure out sort of like we talked about in the beginning of this podcast, sort of navigating a path that has some hope in it and some positivity, right? So being truthful, but also and feeling the feelings, but also making a path of toward resilience, I guess, would be. So a great book, one I would really recommend. Wow. What do you have, Madi? Did you have a few teen books that you've...
Yeah, actually, I just wanted to mention, you know, yesterday was November 19th. Yesterday was Children's Grief Awareness Day. And this is, you know, people, there are a lot of groups out there that, you know, are function to help children who are dealing with the loss of someone really close to them in their lives, like a parent, like a sibling. It can be, I think, really overwhelming. And I was, you know, looking into some books about this topic because I have friends who have passed away and they've left behind little children. But The Invisible String by Patrice Karst, it's actually a fairly old book. It was published in 2000 originally. It's such a lovely book because there's hardly, first of all, any mention at all about like losing someone. There's just like one little thing. But anyway, the premise of the book is basically that we can all stay connected to each other. Even when we're far away from each other, or it seems that, you know, we just don't have many opportunities to connect anymore. So it's a picture book, and I know it's used in a lot of schools. It's these two children who are experiencing anxiety, like, for example, being separated from mom while they're at school, or just even in their beds at night. I mean, not everyone has that sort of experience, obviously, as a child, but I think there can be like a lot of separation issues for some children. But the beauty of the book is that there's just one page where the children very shyly ask, well, what about when, you know, someone dies? And it's just there, that one page that I think it just gives such a beautiful story. It's like you can still be connected to that person in memories, in talking about them. I was also looking into a workbook that's related to that book. It's called The Invisible String Workbook. And there's all sorts of activities that children can do to help them be comforted and remember the person that they've lost. I just really, really recommend that book, not just for grief, but I'm just in, you know, thinking about how can we still be close to people when they're far away, when you don't know if you'll see them again. The other one I happened to also look at was a book by Julia Alvarez, very beautiful book, Where Do They Go? And again, this one specifically is about death. It's written in a poem format. Really, really pretty. Pretty, pretty book. A lot of rhymes. Very simple. Very meditative, I think. And I like it because, I mean, I've not been with a child who has been through this, but I like both of these books because it allows the opportunity to start conversations. I know in my family, when there have been difficult conversations, it's difficult to get anyone to open up. And maybe books will help you to start a conversation. So, and then the last book I absolutely want to talk about is The Forever Sky by Thomas Peacock. This is also kind of along the Native heritage vein. And I put it in this section because it also is celebrating people who have gone on to the next life. It's not necessarily about grief, but it's about these two boys who hang out in the on each spread. They're outside, you know, on a blanket, looking up into the sky, looking for their grandmother, Nuko. It's just beautiful, beautiful images in the sky with stars. There's a lot of native words in here. It's written by Thomas Peacock, and he is a registered member of the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior, and this is Anishinaabe Ojibwa tribe. I think he's from Minnesota, maybe, or says that he lives in Wisconsin and Minnesota, but I think he's from Minnesota. But a beautiful book. It ends with the Northern Lights, which is, of course, something I love to see in any kind of a picture book.
Yeah.
But I have to mention that one of the reasons that it really spoke to me is because, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Dr. Debbie Reese. Mm-hmm. She writes a blog about children's literature from a Native perspective. And I think that one of the important things that when we're talking about Native heritage is we want to just see that it's not just heritage and that we're Native people are still here. It's yes. not something oh, yes. from the Very past, much. You yeah. know? Yes. And in this book, The Forever Sky, you've got two children who are in shorts. You know, you want to think that it's maybe in the summer, like I wish it could be. on a blanket, just they're living everyday life, you know, and celebrating who they are. So, I should probably stop there, but it's just beautiful. I really recommend The Forever Sky by Thomas Peacock, picture book.
Really briefly, that makes me think of Sky Sisters, picture book by Jan Bordeaux-Wabuse. Also two sisters, everyday life, and looking up at the sky at night. Just lovely.
Yeah.
Okay, we are well into this podcast. So, last round, short answer. What are you reading right now? Who wants to start?
The Ship We Built by Lexi Bean, set in the UP, Michigan.
Love that book.
Love it. Love it. I love Not done that with book. It yet, it's, but
it's,
love it.
It's moving. It's just well done.
Yeah.
How about you, Cheryl?
That sounds really good. Well, I've got a pile. I'll just pick one. How to Write One Song by Jeff Tweedy. Getting a little lighter for a bit. That.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm excited about that one. That's going to be just a fun one, but I've heard it's very inspiring as well. And I'm not a songwriter, but that creative process is always inspiring no matter what we're into. So.
And I've got Memorial by Brian Washington. I'm not sure how to describe, but the family issues, there's LGBTQ representation, there's a mixed background, mixed ethnicity relationship that is, and sort of told from a slightly slacker point of view that I'm just enjoying. So I'm not that far in, and I may tell you more about it sometime soon.
All right, excellent.
All right. It was lovely talking to you both.
It was lovely.
Getting together, well. Even if we can only do it in Zoom or team meetings, it's very lovely to be able to sit around and talk books with you two. So,
yeah.
Thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm a professional magician here to tell you about the most magical places I know. Your Capital Area District Library. Download, stream, or check out great entertainment for the whole family. Your favorite movies, TV series, music albums, and more are just a click away. A CATL membership can save you hundreds of dollars a year in free services. Get yours today and let the magic begin right here.